Reggie, I would be like, I'm leaving.
He's like, I'm gonna be honest. Stonewall was a boys' school, and I know like two girls, period, and one of them's my mom.
Yeah.
So like, I really can't talk to you right now.
Oh God, bless his heart.
Hello and welcome to our Riverdale podcast, brought to you by the Aficionados Podcast Network. My name is Robin Jeffrey. I'm a 28-year-old actor and artist. I like rooting anti-heroes, feminist agendas, and I remember way too many details that no one else cares about. You can follow me personally at Robin E. Jeffrey pretty much everywhere, and our fun fact for this episode is, what snacks do you buy at the movies?
Oh, I love this question.
I feel like, right? And it's so relevant. Like, sometimes
we gotta stretch.
A question, that's exactly what I was gonna say. Sometimes we gotta stretch, and then other times it's like falls on our lap and it's a question we want to answer. You know, sometimes we stretch because to answer a question we want to answer. But this one was just perfect. I feel like my snacks at the movies have like evolved over the years, because like I'm always like getting the same thing, but it's changed, you know?
Okay.
Like when I was younger, the movie theater in my city didn't have iced tea, which, as you know, is one of the three beverages I drink.
And so
when I went to the movies, I would always get Strawberry Fruitopia. Always.
That's a good choice.
And so then Strawberry Fruitopia was like the movie theater thing. But now they have iced tea. So I'll get iced tea. And usually I will get, I'm not really like, I like a little bit of popcorn, but I usually can't eat like a whole thing of popcorn. So what I've been doing is getting a thing of nachos. Like, and it's literally just the nachos and the cheese.
This is relatively new because you did not do this in van.
I did a couple times.
Did you get nachos in van?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And it's like basically, you know how when you're going to go to the movies and you're like, I don't have to eat lunch?
Oh yeah, of course.
So the nachos are my lunch, basically,
yeah.
You know?
Oh, I'm with you.
Yeah. So did that, and then anything to eat, did you say?
Sweet.
Oh, anything sweet. That makes way more sense, because I was like, yeah, the nachos, Brittany.
Yeah, stupid.
There's a dollar store right next to the movie theater here, and so I'll get, like, usually, not just a chocolate bar, because that's not enough.
No.
So I'll get, like, one of the little, like, bags of stuff. So, like, the mini Reese's cups, like, the little bags.
Oh, but of course.
Or, like, the little Kit Kat ones.
Oh, that f***ing costs $7 at Cineplex and $1.25 at Dollarama?
Straight up. And so I'm like, I want to eat the same thing, but I don't want to pay $1 million, so I go to the dollar store. And honestly, fantastic place to put a dollar store. I feel like they get a lot of moviegoers before their movie. So yeah.
Back in my day, hang on, I'll introduce myself and then I tell you an old people's story.
Okay. Yeah, who are you? What?
My name is Brittany Ray. I'm a 33-year-old artist and writer. I like badass moms and long naps. I'm on Twitter at Britannia, where I can be found attempting to be interesting and bullying Elon Musk. And my favorite movie snack is the classic like large popcorn with candy in it. So like you have to put, it has to be chocolate. But what I would do at our movie theater, when I grew up in Edmonton, and we also had a dollar store outside of it. So, well, near-ish it. So what I would do is I always carried a big purse, and we would stock up on snacks at the dollar store. But the big brain thing we did is that there was also a food court outside of it.
Ooh.
So we would get full meals, put them in my huge purse, because like no one really cared to check, because like, you know, what does she need a huge purse for? I don't know, who cares? And we would bring entire like pizzas into the movie theater.
They're like, none of my business why this lady has a purse.
100%. Why that purse is suspiciously large, but that seems like none of my business.
Yeah.
And that's what we used to do. So yeah, that's my movie theater thing.
Was that the back in my day?
Yes, because you don't have to do that anymore, because you can just get a full meal in the movie theater now.
Yeah, but it sure is going to cost you $30.
Yeah, Cineplex up here in Canada, they've lost their goddamn minds.
Yeah, like if I want to like eat an actual meal, I'm showing up and spending with my movie ticket like $100 at the movie theater, and I'm not about that life.
No, so it's much easier to go on Discount Tuesdays.
Yes.
And use your Cineplex scene card discounts.
Yes.
If you're in Canada, trust me, do that.
Okay.
Today we have words to say about episode 708 of Riverdale, Hoop Dreams.
Yes, and our step-by-step notes for this season were written by Sheila Daly, aka Blanche. Thank you for everything you do for us. You're my angel. She messaged me last night and she was like, is Brittany going to be able to do the thing this week? And I was like, yep, you're off the hook. Yep, we talked about it and she's definitely going to be on. And she was like, okay, good, because my throat hurts really bad, but I would have powered through if you needed me. And I was like,
oh, bless. Thank you, Blanche. Thank you.
Yeah, you're good. Don't worry. So Hoop Dreams was a 1994 American documentary film. It follows the story of two African-American high school students in Chicago and their dream of becoming professional basketball players.
I have never seen that.
So relevant because basketball.
It sure is.
Yes. Pretty toot or boot for this episode.
I'm gonna give it a toot. I actually really liked it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was more deftly handled than other episodes.
I had a good time too. I'm gonna give it a toot. Brett was horrible as usual, but I screamed. I was so excited. I saw him in the guest stars and I jumped around the room. I was so excited!
Your relationship with Brett is just so deeply personal, you know?
It's really weird, but I love it.
He's such a weirdo.
Toot. All right, you guys. Blanche covered this episode chronologically, and Brittany is well enough to cover the notes, so that's awesome.
It's true. I finally don't have the worst version of COVID. All right, let's start off. Okay. Our episode, as usual, begins with Jughead narrating, this time over a Bulldogs basketball game. He explains that every town has a sports team that excels, and that Riverdale's was their basketball team, mostly thanks to Fred when he played back in the day. The team loses, and Uncle Frank, barf emoji, is a little bitch about it. Everybody else is disappointed, too.
I didn't even notice. Like, there was a lot of people in the crowd, but I guess Jughead was there, and Blanche had said, put in her notes, like, why is Jughead there when his whole thing is not caring about sports? And damn, is that ever a good point. I think it's because he has to do this narration.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Plus, every once in a while, he must get bullied into going.
Right, exactly.
To look like a normal kid.
I did think it was interesting that he said that their football team was, like, just so-so, because, like, in our original timeline, like, the football team was, like, the big thing. Basketball, I guess, was more popular at this point in time.
Do you want to hear my hypothesis for why we're doing basketball instead of football?
Yes.
I think that shooting outside in the winter in Vancouver was just far too much. Mm. And they were like, can we do this indoors for the last season?
Yeah, that's fair. I wrote in my notes, I said, I want the basketball team to lose because I hate Uncle Frank and I don't want him to have nice things.
Yeah, and you're right for that.
Like, I only like two people on this basketball team, and that's Archie and Dilton.
Yeah.
So maybe if Archie and Dilton just stopped being on the basketball team, we could just not give a crap about the basketball team.
Well, and now Reggie, of course.
Yes, exactly. So me and Meta watched this episode together again, and we found a lot of High School Musical parallels, as we have been wont to do.
Oh my god.
So we did notice that Archie is number 10 and not number 14, which is Troy Bolton's number. And I was, like, watching specifically to see what Reggie's number was going to be, but they're actually just in, like, not rehearsal, what's the word?
Practice.
Practice pennies the whole time instead of...
Tell me that you're a theater kid without telling me you're a theater kid. You think that basketball practice is called rehearsal.
So I work at a middle school, and I have said to, like, I think one of the kids was like, I'm doing this for, like, football. I'm trying to be on the football team next year in high school. And I said, oh, cool. When is your... And then I said out loud to him, what's the sports version of audition?
No! Tryouts!
I said that out loud. Yeah. Anyway, so that's my life. But so anyway, I was watching to see what number Reggie was gonna have, and he wasn't wearing a number yet, so I will be watching for that next episode or whenever we see them play.
Okay.
Dilton is the water boy now that Archie isn't anymore. Archie tells Julian to cut the gas, which I love. I do love the slang. I do love it.
Same.
And then the only other thing I had was that, like, Julian seems so pressed about this. He's, like, so personal about this. It's like, Julian, as if you played with Fred, as if Fred was your personal hero, like, chill out.
The thing that I've noticed about, like, a lot of sports movies and stuff is that the person who has the legacy and the guy dedicated to that guy's legacy, it doesn't matter who that guy's child is or who his prodigy is, to the guy, like, to the stan, basically.
Yeah.
It's a parasocial relationship with, like, a legend.
Yeah, in other news, I realized that two of those were, like, those last two notes were for next scene. So, my bad, go on.
All right. So in the locker room after the game, Archie says that it's okay they lost because they still have the rest of the season. Julian angrily disagrees and yells at the team to work harder. When Archie tells him to lay off, he says he shouldn't want to spoil Fred's legacy because, you know, he's toxic.
As if you played with Julian.
Exactly.
As if you played with him, Fred. Oh my god. As if you played with Julian. As if you played with Fred, Julian. Julian, as if you played with Fred yourself. chill.
He did. He's personal friends with Fred. Like, Fred's dead, but, like, they're still besties.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Archie waits by Uncle Frank's car because, remember, he stole Archie's car. And watches as Uncle Frank talks to Clifford Blossom.
Disgusting.
This fucking guy with his horrible lace front wig.
Oh, it's bad.
He asks what they were talking about, and Uncle Frank tells him he's recruiting a new player for their team to help win, a farm boy called Reggie the Blur Mantle.
The Blur. Because you never see him coming.
Oh, shit.
And apparently he's from Duck Creek. I don't think we've ever heard of Duck Creek before, but okay.
I think maybe this is all just made up for this season.
Yeah.
You know, who's to say? Yeah. Cheryl and Tony are kissing in the locker room. Cheryl asks if they should go steady just for them, and no one, and only they would know. Tony is not into this idea, saying that it seems nerdy. Cheryl says that's okay because it's kind of like they already are, and then leaves. Tony looks disheveled.
I'm like, oh my gosh, this locker room gets a lot of action. In the trailer also, I'm just like, y'all.
Who won't Betty kiss?
People can just walk in here.
Yeah.
Truly. Okay, so this sort of goes in with, like, one of our little complaints about Tony recently is that, like, she seems to have, like, very 2023 problems, you know?
Yeah.
She's, like, fine with certain people knowing she's gay, but, like, now she cares about no one knowing. Like, it's confusing.
Her ever-shifting perspective on her own sexuality and how she expresses it sure does change to fit whatever moral of the week the show is trying to express.
Yeah, and then they were talking about getting pinned, and I was like, I think that just happened. I think that's a different thing.
Yeah, I think I did just watch it.
I remember, like,
and good for you guys.
In like 701, Blanche was like, oh my gosh, I thought they meant something else. And now I'm like, yeah, they did, and here it is.
Yeah, it's right.
Yeah.
Someone the other day was like, someone, it was my wife. We were watching something from the 90s and we were like, what happened to, like, kissing on TV and movies? Because, like, it used to be, like, good, real kissing. And now it's very, like, chaste, like, very, like, you don't see tongue. And, like, listen, I understand some people are not into that, but I also miss, like, nasty kissing.
Yeah.
What was I talking about?
You know what, Brittany?
These two have it figured out.
Yeah, but I also feel like it's a product of COVID times as well.
No, I mean, like, the last decade. Like, it's a product of puritanical culture. Mm. But, I mean, that's also a very good point.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say, Cheryl and Tony.
Like, I think, I can't remember who it was.
Serving.
I'm pretty sure it was Mads who just recently posted, like, a bunch of pictures on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And one of the things was, like, a COVID test. And it specifically said, like, it was, like, for the show. And it said, like, test right before the scene. And it was labeled intimate. So,
Oh my god.
Interesting. So they have to test before every single scene like that, which I think is smart and good.
That sounds so frustrating as actors, but, like, also, yeah, that's obviously, I love that.
I bet they're really good at stuffing that stuff up their nose.
Oh my god. And every time I do it, I sneeze.
Yeah, oh, me too. Especially because I only ever take those tests when I don't feel good and I'm sneezing anyway.
Yeah.
And then lastly, like, Cheryl's just like, oh, you said no? Okay, well, in my mind, you said yes. So, it's very delusional.
She said, I shop at Lululemon.
She said, this does not make sense with my fantasy, so I'm going to make it make sense with my fantasy.
Good for her.
She's like, do you want to be my girlfriend? And Tony's like, no. And Cheryl's like,
but yeah.
Well, it's kind of like you already are anyway, so.
So, I mean.
In my mind, you are. Bye.
Don't worry about it. Like, you said no, but you said yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Archie and Uncle Frank pull up to Reggie's farm. While Uncle Frank talks to his parents. Blanche's notes say, while the stink bug, and then crossed out Uncle Frank. And I'm like, yeah, you're right, bestie.
Yeah.
While Uncle Frank talks to his parents, he and Archie sort of talk. Archie is making small talk, but Reggie isn't into it. We learn that he used to play for Stonewall Prep and dropped out.
Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. Literally, can I do a recreation of when Maida and I were watching the episode, please?
I would like for you to, yes.
Okay, I'm gonna make the microphone a little bit farther away here, okay. You guys. Okay, Reggie shows up with his, like, beautiful hair and his cute little farm outfit, and I said, and I quote, oh, yeah!
No!
Hello! Hello!
Why did you Kool-Aid man Reggie?
Because he's so handsome! Have you seen, his hair is so good.
It's true, it is.
It's great.
I'm gay, so, like, I can only see so much physical beauty in a man.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But you're right for this. He is a very beautiful man.
Right. And so he sort of explains, like, Archie immediately is like, so are you are from Korea? And it's like, oh my God, some discretion, right. Please. Jeez.
Literally, Reggie's sitting there and he's like, oh, so we're just doing all of this again. Got it.
We're just doing this immediately? Cool. I like that Reggie was like, you are extremely nosy.
You are so very white.
Yeah.
That poor boy. Archie, Mary, Reggie, and Uncle Frank have dinner together. Reggie says his dad was injured in the war and he had to step up at the farm because it's all his family has. Archie asks if the government is helping them out since his dad's a veteran, but Reggie says they don't consider his family quote-unquote eligible because they aren't white. Uncle Frank says the Blossoms will make sure Reggie's parents are set so he can focus on playing basketball. Like, yo, the way they basically had to, like, sell this kid to a basketball team in order to get by because the American government said, off.
And here's the thing also is that, so this is what Blanche said about the scene. She said, I hate that they're trying to make Uncle Frank more likable this episode. He still sucks and I still hate him. He doesn't get any points for not being racist. That's quite literally the bare minimum. And here's the thing. In my eyes, when I watched this scene, I didn't even think Uncle Frank was being not racist. I genuinely thought he was like, well, that sucks that you didn't get any money, but only if it takes you away from basketball.
No, he's being racist. It's the more insidious. Listen, to quote Jean-Luc Picard, sometimes a bad guy is not the mustache twirling one. It's the one that you think might have a few redeeming qualities.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's the more insidious version of racism. It's the little microaggressions. It's the, your heritage doesn't matter as long as you do what you're told.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Well, he's just like, it sucks that you don't have any money, but the main thing that sucks is that you had to leave doing something that you're good at because of that. And that does suck, but it's only for Uncle Frank's own good. He doesn't actually care. Like, if Reggie wasn't good at basketball, he would not give a crap that his family wasn't getting money from the government when they were owed it. He wouldn't care.
Uncle Frank is patting himself on the back for sort of, in his mind, saving this poor boy.
Yeah, exactly.
He's awful.
Archie, my poor boy, is such a nice kid, but he sure is ignorant. And truly, literally forgets racism exists in this scene. And, you know, it's nice because we get to hear from Mary, who actually, like, has an opinion that it's, like, not good and not in a self-serving way, you know?
Yeah.
So, shout out.
It's how you know that Mary's a good person and Frank is not.
Truly.
But again, these, having said, like, they are good people, it only goes so far because in a lot of ways, a lot of them are complicit in the system that props up the racism.
Yes. Yeah, and if I could give props to this show for literally one thing, thank you for not putting Mary and Uncle Frank together.
Oh my God,
thank you so much. Because they are living in the same house, and they're, like, on either side of the table, and I'm just like, thank God they're not actually together. And show, if you do that, I will
quit.
I don't know what I'll do, but I'll be really mad. Yeah.
Oh God, no. I also think, like, as an aside, this episode is a good moral of the week, like, I guess, event on allyship.
Yeah.
And how to do it properly. And I thought that that was fascinating because it wasn't too, it was on the nose without being obnoxious, which is a rarity for Riverdale.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Archie shows Reggie his bedroom where they'll be sleeping. Reggie notices Betty at the window. Archie immediately closes the shade and tells him he'll meet her at school and that they're supposed to keep the curtains closed from now on.
Truly, I was like, I never even considered Reggie Betty. Veggie.
But I'm doing it now.
And now I'm like, hello? It's like, it's kind of cute.
Like, I'm not mad at that.
I literally, like, put in my notes later. I was just like, I think I want them to be together because I just want Reggie to have whatever he wants.
Yeah.
I just want them to be so happy.
I want Reggie to have nice things. And I want Betty to finally get laid like she so desperately wants to be.
And it's so, well, I have thoughts on that later as well. But it is so refreshing to see them do something that we didn't expect. I immediately thought Reggie would like Veronica. Veronica obviously likes Reggie. But so to see him sort of like swerve over to Betty is like really interesting and cool.
I also like that.
And Archie like closes the curtains. He's like, don't even look at her. She's mine. And
get out of here.
I was watching the episode and I was like, Reggie, ask why they have to keep the curtains closed.
Reggie.
Ask why.
Reggie, be more curious. Yeah. Reggie's like, this is none of my business.
Yeah.
Hal walks into Betty's room and asks if they can talk. He says he's been talking to Werther's and suggested that Betty should be exercising more to burn off some of her excess energy. She's horny. She's not excitable. Mm-hmm. Well, not in that way. Not on Riverdale Grandstand, though. There's too many temptations, boys, there. Hal says he talked to Clifford and he's going to arrange arrangement with Cheryl that Betty joins the River Vixens. Joke's on you, Hal, because if she's bisexual, that's also distractions.
Exactly. And also, Hal made it sound like Dr. Werthers was the one who was like, you should make her one of the River Vixens. And I'm right? Dr. Werthers is out here just trying to watch Betty be a cheerleader. Like, I hate that.
I don't trust this man. And he's gross and icky, and I don't like him.
I also tried to see what book she was reading, but it was, like, so small that, like, I think only if I, like, knew what the book cover looked like already, I'd be able to tell what book that was. Because we do see the book cover, but it's, like, really far away and quite blurry, so I couldn't tell what book she was reading.
Alrighty.
Blanche also said, I am not a parent, and I know it's unrealistic for this timeline, but if Betty was my kid, I'd for real just buy her a vibrator.
Yes. This is actually an amazing comment because, yeah, like, if your kid is clearly sexually mature, very interested in this, and, like, not only is curious, but has educated herself.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, let her explore that part of herself in a safe way.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. So Lizzo talks to Tony outside of school. She teases her about Cheryl and says she's got a good hustle going on, helping girls out of the closet and then ditching them. Tony notices Tabitha walking to school and leaves the conversation.
I hate Lizzo. She's the worst. Am I supposed to like her? Because I don't.
No, I don't think you're supposed to like her. I do think that, like, it's probably, like, a jealousy thing.
Yeah.
But...
Oh, it's definitely a jealousy thing.
Yeah.
But I also think, like, how do you expect her to, like, ditch Cheryl and then come crawling back to you after you keep, like, insulting her?
Oh, yeah. I mean, listen, the girl's got no game.
No, it's bad.
But what she does have is the audacity, and sometimes... Especially for gay women, that could work.
Yeah. Tony says thanks for the apple butter, and I was like, did she send some to your house? But it turns out it means flattery, so, all
right. I was like, it's slang, right?
Yeah, it's slang. Yeah.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah. And I would also run after Tabitha if I saw her.
I am so happy that Tabitha's back.
Me too.
I'm obsessed.
That's my friend.
Tony and Tabitha walk into school, and Tony asks how the tour with Mrs. Till is going. Again, this is...
Yeah, we're bringing this back up.
Tabitha says Mrs. Till is incredibly inspiring, but seeing how hateful people are in every town is incredibly draining. She asks Tony what she's been up to and if she's still writing for the Blue and Gold. Tony says no, she hasn't written much at all, and also that she's a cheerleader now.
And of course Tabitha is like, which of these things is more important? and I think that's why Tony sort of realizes that too.
I really like that Tony reminds, that Tabitha reminds Tony, like, hey, yeah, like, please pursue all of these things, but also don't forget that you have passions outside of Cheryl.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't lose yourself in her, which was one of the biggest issues with Tony's character in the early seasons, was, like, everything about her became she was Cheryl's girlfriend and nothing else.
Yes, correct. Yeah. Blanche said, 50s Tabitha is so cute, I adore her, and I love her glasses. Ditto. In this scene is when we got to see the guest stars. Aaron Westbrook was put in as a special guest star for the first time instead of, like, a main character, which...
I am not happy.
Me neither. She better be a special guest star, like, for the rest of the season, please.
Because, like, here's the thing. When they were doing the credits on Star Trek Picard, mm-hmm. Every single of the legacy characters, they were all special guest stars every single episode.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no reason you can't do
that. Even if they weren't in the episode?
No, if they weren't in the episode, okay. They weren't the special guest star. But, like, Riker, for example, was in every episode of Picard Season 3.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes me feel better.
And he was a special guest star every episode.
That makes me feel better. I feel like what they should have done is said special guest star and had... everybody's name in every single one so that you never knew who was going to be in which episode and it was going to be a little surprise.
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then here's where I saw that Brett was in the guest stars and I was so excited. Unfortunately, he literally had one line in one scene and he was horrible, but I sure was excited to see him.
Well, there's something...
He's a horrible, horrible person.
Exactly. There's something special about watching an actor just absolutely slay at being awful.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah.
So true. He, like, joins... Well, not joins. He has joined Chick, Dr. Hurdle Jr. Like, these characters that I just have, like, are not, objectively not great people. Sorry, Dr. Hurdle Jr.
I mean, he's not.
He's not. But I just love them for whatever reason, you know?
You know what? You're valid.
They're my friends. I want to have a big old group hug.
You are just so very much this special interest gremlin fan. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, some people just really go for the gremlins, and that's you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not because you find them morally...
No.
...intriguing, but because they are just kind of little gremlins that are interesting to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. Betty, Veronica, Kevin, and Cheryl hang out in the student lounge. They talk about how Betty's a vixen now, much to Cheryl's chagrin, she might add, and how Veronica bought the Babylonium. Archie approaches them with Reggie somewhat reluctantly following him and asks if they can join. Veronica immediately thinks Reggie is hot. That's fair, bestie.
Yep.
And asks who he is. Reggie introduces himself. Cheryl does the same since they'll be working closely together, but Reggie is mostly interested in Betty.
Oh.
Archie, it's kind of cute. I'm like, oh.
It is.
What's their ship name?
It's so cute. It's Beggy.
Beggy. Did you come up with that or is that the actual ship name?
I came up with it, but it probably is the actual ship name if I had to guess.
Okay, but it's like how...
Because it's always just B and the dude's name, the rest of the dude's name.
I know that...
Bughead, Barchi.
Tabitha and Jughead is apparently Jabitha.
Yeah.
But I don't like it, so to me, it's always Jugatha.
It's Jugatha because you need to take pieces of everybody's name, not just the first letter of somebody's name and then the rest of everyone else's name. But there's not a lot of Betty and Reggie to take, especially when the E sound is for both of them. So I think it's Beggy.
Okay. I'll allow this.
And I think that it works out so perfectly. Like, this is so smart because, like, Betty is more, I mean, you know, Betty's been doing what she's been doing lately, but she's, like, more understated than Veronica, you know, and everything. And I feel like this new character of Reggie, who's a sort of more of an understated person, would, like, be more attracted to Betty than he is to Veronica. This makes total sense to me.
Well, that's because he views Betty as the girl next door, and he has a preconceived notion of who she is. And then, of course, later, she's like, no, I'm not the stereotype that you think I am. I am a sex fiend.
It's true.
But also someone who deeply knows herself and her body and knows what she wants. And he was like, oh, you're not the stereotype I thought you were. You scare me.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'll see how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
Archie tells the group that Reggie is staying with them for the basketball season. Veronica continues to question him and asks, does he like the movies? Reggie says that actually there's no theater in Duck Creek and they don't have a TV at home. She ignores this and tells him about the movie theater she owns. Maybe he could work there. Reggie excuses himself and says he's just here to play basketball.
He's like, I'm really overwhelmed right now.
Veronica's version of flirting is, do you want to be employed by me?
It's so much. I was like, Veronica, one of the first words you ever say to him ever is flutterbum.
I know, and she says it like multiple times this episode.
Dude, that's the thing. Like, I have this in my notes later, like the next time she says it, but I'm just like, what is with this show and like choosing a slang word and having one character say it like 3 or 4 times in one episode?
And then never again.
And then never say it again. Like, what is that? It's so weird.
I think it's the Riverdale Writers Room, like, 50s word of the week, and they have a bet on how many times they can get it in an episode.
Yeah. Veronica's doing so much, I'm like, okay, chill. Play a little hard to get. Don't even play hard to get, just be there. Just exist, you know?
She has never in her life just been there to exist. She is...
It's true.
Always gonna be doing the most.
And she calls him Reginald. I'm like, did he say that was his name? He said Reggie.
Oh yeah, she full named it without even asking. Yeah! I mean, of course that's gonna be his full name, but girl!
But like, what if it isn't? And also, like, can you just call people what they want to be called?
No.
And then I just thought it was funny that everyone in the room was into Reggie except for Cheryl and Archie. Cheryl did a lot of eye-rolling this scene, and I really appreciated that. But also, maybe Archie is. I don't know. They had a scene at the end that was, like, kind of questionable.
I will ship Archie with every dude. Yep. I don't give a shit. I will do it.
Uh-huh.
And I will do it happily.
Yep.
Tabitha approaches Jughead in the hallway and asks if he was the one who offered to help her with her homework on the road. He apologizes for getting preoccupied, but she says that it's okay. She worked it out with Featherhead. I find that hard to believe. Featherhead...
Me too.
...has never once tried to do anything for a black student.
Yep, Featherhead's probably just like, take a bunch of zeros. Not my fault.
She asks what's kept him so busy, and Jughead says that he's been writing comic books. Tabitha seems really interested, and Jughead adds that because of his job, he got to meet and work with one of his literary heroes, Brad Rayberry. Tabitha says she's a fan of his, and Jughead is so excited that she likes the same things as him. She says she loves all genres, including sci-fi. Jug asks if she'd like to meet Brad, and she says, that'd be great.
Aw.
They're in love!
I thought it was so... They're in love! Like, literally just immediately. It's beautiful. She's so cool. Jug immediately likes her. And, like, I do not care about Ace Jughead when it's about Tabitha. I do not see it.
Oh, yeah.
Because when Jughead was trying to get with Veronica, Veronica was all lust about it, and Tabitha just, like, wants to get to know him, and it's all romance with those two. So, like, it makes total sense to me.
Well, it's just a really nice, like, meeting of the minds.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're just perfect together.
Yeah, and, like, I think this was cool because Jughead's like, oh my gosh, I forgot that I was gonna do that. And that's because it was before Tabitha, like, took his memory at the end of 701. Like, he promised to do that as, like, our Jughead, and then she erased his memory, so that's why he forgot.
Oh, that's right.
And I thought that was really cool.
I kind of forgot that. I guess Jughead did too.
Yeah.
Get his ass!
And then, I'm sorry that Tabitha doesn't get to meet Brad because he's dead. No, I'm not sad. I'm just sad for Tabitha because I know she was interested in doing that. I'm not that sad that Brad is dead.
Yeah, he was like, he was fine.
He was fine.
He was, okay.
If he continues the, like, mystery of what happened to Ethel's parents, then that's great. And he's doing his job.
Exactly. If he continues to be a plot device.
Yeah, yeah.
Oops. I think we might be monsters.
Eh.
Eh. That's fine.
I'm a Brett stan. I already know I'm a monster.
Oh, man. And I voluntarily hang out with you, too.
Yeah.
A damning condemnation of me. Kevin approaches Veronica at work and asks if he could maybe work there. He loves the movies and is looking for something to do. Ronnie says sure, and since he's already friends with Clay, maybe she could get his help? She says that she has a crush on him, but he isn't picking up her hints. And if Kevin could help with that? He reluctantly agrees, and she hires him on the spot.
He's like, okay. When I was watching it, I was like, wait, is Veronica's gaydar just that bad? And, like, thank God it wasn't, and Veronica was doing this on purpose the whole time. I sort of had an inkling that that was true, but I also was just like, I would not have the gall, the audacity to, like, touch the hand of a boy who I was almost certain wasn't interested in me and, like, try and flirt with him. I would simply not have the confidence.
Right? I was like...
Or the courage.
Veronica, I will lose respect for you if you cannot tell. You should be able to tell, queen.
Exactly. So, like, some of my notes here are just like, Veronica... I wrote, oh my god, Veronica, leave the queers alone.
And I mean, later, she kind of like, we'll talk about it later. I have questions about Veronica.
Yeah. Okay, so first of all, she says, are you here to see Singing in the Rain again? And I'm pretty sure I made a reference, like, last episode or the episode before, I just didn't bring it up. But, like, I, to this day, when I say that I don't like someone, I go, I can't stand him, which is a quote from Singing in the Rain.
Oh my god.
I love Singing in the Rain. I want to see Singing in the Rain.
Especially in the theater.
Yeah. Oh. That'd be great.
That'd be such a slay.
I think that Kevin and Clay are gonna make out in the projection booth at some point for sure.
Oh, that's literally what I said the minute she said he's in the projection booth. I was like, oh, they're gonna have the projection booth.
And then I also, like, this was before I knew that Veronica had set this all up for, like, on purpose and stuff, but I was like, Veronica's gonna date anything that moves. Like, at this point, she's just like, you hot boy, you hot boy, you hot boy, you hot boy.
Yeah, it's almost like all of the storylines for the women this season are that they are horny and that they don't have much complexity beyond that.
It almost feels like Veronica just tries to date boys she feels like she should date.
When in reality, maybe she wants to date girls.
Just saying. Lastly, Blanche said that she's 99% sure that the Babylonium set this season is the same as Percival's Curiosity Shop last season.
It does look like it.
I have to rewatch and look at that, because I totally didn't catch that, but I gotta look.
Listen, there's only so much you can do when your show has a $2 budget.
Truly.
Yeah. At basketball practice, Uncle Frank introduces Reggie to the team. He says for practice, they'll split into two teams, Reggie the captain of one and Julian of the other.
Bad plan, Uncle Frank.
What?
I just said, Uncle Frank, that's a garbage plan.
Yeah.
No one knows Reggie. No one knows him. Why would anybody join his team?
It's like he was trying to set him up for failure, or he was just too stupid. He was like, here's the thing, this is why Uncle Frank's a bad coach. He was too stupid to realize that that was not a good idea.
Yeah, exactly.
Everyone except Archie and Fangs go to Julian's team. Fangs complains that they won't have enough players, but Reggie says Dilton, the water boy, can play with them, and that will be enough. They play against each other, and the Vixens cheer from the bleachers. Reggie's team wins, and Julian is pissed.
Like, at any given time, like, they could have different, like, you know, like, just being like, choose a team is so stupid, because it's just like, well, what if we have 4 players and they have 6 players, you know? Like, you just pick, like, that makes no sense.
I thought it was friggin' hilarious that Reggie was like, actually, I can work with this. Like, I'm so good and I am so confident in myself.
Yeah, he's like, actually...
Give me the water boy.
Yeah, it's true. And it's perfect. Like, first of all, be nice to Dilton, because everyone's, like, being mean to Dilton. And I feel like another thing that Archie could do, and, like, he is sort of nice to Dilton, and honestly, Reggie's the one who steps up and is nice to Dilton, which I do really appreciate. But, like, Archie, having been through that, having been the water boy, should be the one to stand up for Dilton, I feel like.
I think that's actually super fair.
Yeah. I did think it was so nice that Archie, like, immediately chooses Reggie, and of course Fangs is like, I hate Julian, so I'll choose anyone that's not Julian. And yeah, I just thought it was so, so sweet, and we've got nice guy Reggie, and it's beautiful. I just want, like I said, I just want Reggie to have anything he wants. He can date Betty. That's fine.
He can date
Do it.
You speak for Betty.
Yeah. And so while we were watching this, me and Meta were like, this is just like the beginning of High School Musical 3.
Wait, really?
Yes, because Reggie is Troy.
Okay.
And Dilton is Rocket Man. Uh-huh. Jimmy the Rocket. Wait, yeah. Jimmy the Rocket Zara. Okay. He goes by Rocket Man. Okay. And they like bring him in and Troy's like, put in Rocket Man. And they're like, but we only have 16 minutes left. But, you know, like they're singing. And then so they bring in Rocket Man. And then at the very end, Troy passes to Rocket Man, and Rocket Man gets the winning basket.
Oh.
Like, is it just a stereotype of basketball? Yes. But also, this happened in High School Musical 3.
Guy who's only seen High School Musical.
Except Troy's the one who got lifted.
Guy who's only seen High School Musical 3 watching his next movie. Kind of getting a High School Musical 3 vibe.
This is just like High School Musical 3.
This is just like High School.
Yeah, except Troy's the one who got lifted and not Rocket Man at the end, but they've lifted Dilton instead of Reggie in this one.
I loved that. I loved that Reggie immediately saw an underdog and was like, I'm going to lift him up too, which is just, he's a wonder boy.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Because he knows what it's like. Oh.
He does. Oh. He's a good boy.
True.
In the locker room, Archie asks if anyone wants to go to Pops. Reggie hasn't tried them yet, and it's a post-practice tradition. No one says anything because they're all f***ing racists. That was my addition.
Yeah, but you're right.
Reggie says it's okay. He has homework, but Julian stands up and says they should go. He even invites Dilton.
So basically the concept is that they're like, we don't want to go with Reggie. And then Reggie's like, I can't go. And now everyone's like, oh, okay, then yes, we want to go.
Yeah.
Which sucks.
Well, they've all been so thoroughly humiliated because a team that only had one white boy on it and three men of color just kicked their asses. Like, they have been humbled. The only white guy on that team was Archie.
And Julian, but yeah.
No, on the Reggie side of the team.
Oh, I understand. Yes, yeah. I keep thinking that Reggie is Jughead from behind because he's wearing like a Jughead-esque jacket and he's got black hair that's like all wavy like Jughead's, and I'm just like, what's Jughead doing in the basketball locker room?
I know that Charles is way taller than...
Yeah.
Well, did you see who he's dating?
Charles Melton?
Yeah.
I feel like probably, but I can't remember who.
Hang on. Because now I forgot, but I remember it being scandalous and I wanted to talk to you about it.
Remember when he was in Ariana Grande music video? Okay, when I search Charles Melton height, I don't want it in meters. I know I'm Canadian, but I don't want it in meters, just so you guys know.
Okay, because the thing about being in Canada is that we don't measure anything by our own system.
Yeah. Oh, Brittany, I have to tell you something.
Okay.
Cole is taller than Charles Melton.
Okay, but here's the thing about Cole.
Mm-hmm. He said he's a sloucher.
I think we've all seen what he's been up to lately.
Yes.
Cole's presence.
And that brings his posture down.
Yes, it does. Cole's presence is that of someone who is much shorter than Charles Melton.
Yeah.
This is so weird. I thought for sure, I literally saw it and it was someone wild, like Halsey or something.
Mm, hold on.
But I can't find it. It was on TikTok. I'll figure it out later.
Charles Melton dating.
And it just says it's someone named Chase, but I was like, no. I saw recently that it's a different woman that he's dating.
I saw Vanessa Hudgens.
Oh my god, wait, is he dating Vanessa Hudgens? That can't be right.
One of these pictures is Vanessa Hudgens, but that might have been a while ago. I don't know. Whatever. Shout out Charles. Shout out whoever's dating Charles. Congratulations.
Not bad for a bitch from Riverdale.
Yeah.
At cheerleading practice, Cheryl says it's time for all the Vixens to be assigned to their player for the season. Betty is confused, and Cheryl explains that once assigned to someone, they'll show them extra support all season, such as baking him cookies, wearing his jersey, helping with homework, etc. Gross. Cheryl's paired with Julian, Tony with Archie, and Betty with Reggie.
I'm so glad that they never did this in the original timelines. This is very clearly like a 50s-ism.
It's a 50s-ism, and I'm just like, oh god, I could never. Yeah. Imagine having to make your entire life supporting some dude at a sport instead of like pursuing your own hobbies and interests.
Dude who I hardly know, like.
Yeah.
Okay. We did notice that Cheryl also has an embroidered shirt.
Does she really?
Yeah, it says Cheryl on it. It's great. Very exciting.
Good. Thank God. Because, like, what if we didn't know who she was?
Right. Exactly.
Thank God.
And I did love... Oh, my God. Literally, I think it was 7:01 when Veronica showed up and we were like, well, Cheryl, Veronica doesn't know you because you don't have an embroidered shirt.
You don't have an embroidered shirt on.
And so Cheryl took that note.
Thank God.
I do appreciate it.
I knew she was listening to us. I knew she wanted our fashion advice.
Yeah. I do think it's funny that Cheryl paired herself with Julian because she's like, because he's my brother. And so, like, I don't have to worry about, like, dealing with men or, like, whatever. But also she's like literally cock blocking Julian at any given time. Julian's she's like, I'm so cool.
She's like, I will not subject that boy to anyone.
Yeah, and I will save whatever girl I was going to give to him. So you're welcome to everybody. She gives Betty Reggie, which is exciting. So Cheryl ships Veggie. And I assume Midge got fangs.
Oh, probably.
I assume. And then probably Betty's not allowed to get Archie, which is why Cheryl didn't give her Archie.
Oh, that would have been cute, though.
Yeah.
Like, Cheryl's like, I know y'all are freaks. Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. Well, later when she was just like, Archie, I can't marry you. Go date Betty. And now she's like, sorry, Betty. My dad will get mad at me.
Sorry, Betty. I would if I could.
Yeah.
You know what? I wonder if that's actually maybe a future plot line, is that Betty does get assigned to Archie.
Maybe.
That would be cute.
That would be cute.
I want my, actually, we're getting a lot of Barchie crumbs. Like, it is so clear that it's Barchie Endgame.
Yeah, and it is, they are crumbs, but I'm collecting them, and soon they will be a full piece of toast.
100%. And we're gonna slather it in butter. Apple butter.
Apple butter.
Jughead and Tabitha are at Brad Rayberry's apartment. Oh my god, can I just say, their chemistry is so stupid cute.
It's so good!
They're so charming together. Like, they're just, like, two awkward little things who, like, are so into each other, but, like, not so sure cute about it. And they're such so nerds, cute. I just love them. Brad is not answering the door, so they decide to try again tomorrow. Jughead asks if she wants to head to the movies, and Tabitha excitedly says yes. Oh. Jughead disgustingly takes his gum out of his mouth and uses it to stick a note to Brad's door. That's why Brad hangs himself later. He's like, you did this with gum.
Oh, no. I feel like he could have just, like, slipped it under the door, but, like, okay, you know?
Yeah, no, what actually Jughead just was like, you know what this man needs? Spit.
I wonder if, like, Keller found it still stuck there when he showed up for the wellness check later, you know what I mean?
He probably did, and, like, I'm like, okay, Jughead, you need to be careful, because do you remember, like, a couple episodes ago when you were already accused of murder?
Right, he's literally like, here's all my DNA on this door!
Well, they don't have DNA testing yet.
Oh, alright, great, lucky for you.
No big deal.
I did think it was so sweet that she, like, immediately was like, yes, yeah, I'll go with you. I would love to go with you. It's, like, so cute.
My sweet little nerd. I love her so much. She's just, oh, she is everything to me.
And then I was like, Tabitha, it's kind of a red flag that he just did that with his gum. That's gross. But whatever. Like, listen, when you have a crush on somebody, you will excuse a lot of things.
100%.
So that's realistic to me.
Yeah.
Blanche said, as gross as the gum thing was, it was such an FP move. And you know what? That's true. That is fair.
You know what? Yeah, I'm gonna allow him his disgustingness, because that is an FP move.
Yeah. The movie that they want to go see is It Came From Beneath the Sea. It's a 1955 American science fiction monster film. A monstrous giant octopus rampages along the west coast of North America after becoming too radioactive from nuclear testing in the South Pacific for it to be able to hunt its natural prey. Spooky!
We used to be a society that makes movies like that.
Yeah.
I said that and then immediately went, The Meg is an entire franchise. I have been corrected by myself.
Correct.
And if you haven't seen The Meg and you love stupid monster movies, oh my god, watch The Meg. It's so bad. Yeah. Cheryl meets Tony in the locker room after practice. Tony is upset, saying she can't be in the Vixens anymore. Cheryl says that she could pair her with someone rather than Archie, but she says no. Tony says that this doesn't feel right anymore, and she doesn't want to be a cheerleader. Cheryl asks if this has anything to do with asking her to go steady earlier. She says no, but this whole scene isn't for her, and she's not the settling down type. She apologizes and says she needs space to figure herself out.
I'm just pissed that Lizzo was right. Like, I feel like Lizzo got in Tony's head, and it worked, and I hate that.
Here's the thing. I don't think Lizzo was right. I think that Lizzo put a preconceived insecurity into...
And then Tony, which made Tony make it make true, or make it become true.
Yeah, she panicked.
Yep, 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 yep.
And it was like, and then of course later when she has that discussion with Tabitha, because we also have like this perspective that Tabitha's like, oh, you've lost yourself. Why aren't you doing the things that you're passionate about? And right. Tabitha talking about it is not the same as Lizzo talking about it. Like, Lizzo is very much of being course. Like, oh, you're not really into these girls. You're not a commitment girl. And Tabitha's like, no, you can be a commitment girl. Just don't forget who you are and what you care about as well.
Yeah.
It's the angel and the devil on Tony's shoulders.
Yeah. My only other, like, just bummer. The only other thing I had was just that Evelyn was on the Vixens and now she's gone and I want to know who she was paired up with.
God. I hope it's someone insufferable.
I don't know, someone random. I feel like if Cheryl was mad at Julian, she should give Evelyn to him and that'd be funny.
Yes, that would be extremely funny.
Yeah.
At the movies, Jughead orders a ton of food, all for him. Tabitha doesn't mind, though. All of their snacks cost 75 cents and I'm like,
I wish that was me.
That's like, deadass, that would be $75.
Great.
Inflation is...
Great.
Great.
Correct. Great, correct?
Great!
And also, I don't know what I was trying to say, even.
I liked it.
Oh, I think it was correct and right.
Great.
Great, great.
Oh, great.
Oh, great.
So they leave to go watch the movie with their snacks, and I just want to say, this scene reminds me so much of a scene from Charlie's Angels,
mm.
where Dylan, Drew Barrymore, she's like, can I get 3 burgers, 3 shakes, and 3 apple pies? What do you guys want? And I'm like, yeah. Ah, yes, this is my favorite joke.
It's a classic. I'm a classic.
A sucker for these jokes. Veronica notes to Clay that Jughead and Tabitha on a date is interesting. She tells him she actually used to go out with Jughead. Clay humors her and asks what happened.
I guess if you can say that.
I know, she's like, I want to, I'm like, girl, not really though.
We were entangled. All right.
Veronica says that she ended it because he's weird. He's a weirdo.
Literally.
I mean, that's basically why.
Basically.
She also says that she prefers her men to be more worldly and mysterious. Veronica, I think you prefer your men to be women.
Yeah.
Clay excuses himself to start the next movie. Ronnie stops him and says to think about picking up what she's putting down. Kevin watches all of this and looks annoyed.
Well, that's fair.
Was this phrase around in the 50s?
It was weird.
It must have been.
I don't know. Yeah, oh yeah, interesting. I'm not sure. I did love all the... I feel like we've definitely gotten Senior Mints before.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure we've gotten Butterflinger before. I don't know if we've gotten Mint Bogos. And I think Three Buccaneers is new, but and I'm not sure about Skit Scat, but very fun.
Skit Scat is not a good... No.
Name for chocolate? No.
I agree. If your parody chocolate name has the word scat in it, you need to go probably back to the drawing board.
Yeah, probably don't. Yeah.
Maybe rethink that one before you put it in the episode.
But I was excited. I said, that's my boy. That's my baby. You know, I love Food Jughead. He's the best. But he did ask for extra ice in his soda. And I was like, are you crazy?
Right?
Extra ice? You're just asking for it to be more watered down? What's wrong with you?
Like, because, like, I love a good amount of ice. I am, at my heart, an ice girly. But yeah. Extra ice? You're gonna get less soda. Think it through.
I try to take my time when I drink my iced tea, you know? So...
Yeah. It's gonna melt.
It's gonna melt. Like, what are you doing?
He's just, you anyway. Know, he's weird. He's a weirdo. This is why he cannot be...
That's exactly why Veronica was like, nah.
With Veronica. He's too weird.
That was the last straw for Veronica. But yeah, Jughead's got big comics money, so he can afford that 75 cents. And Veronica, kind of jealous. And Clay says that he thinks that Jughead is handsome, which I thought was really sweet.
I also thought that was sweet, too.
I liked that. And yeah, I like couldn't tell if Veronica was talking about Clay or about Reggie when she was talking about worldly and mysterious. Serious, but I think I don't know. At this point, I still thought that Veronica, like, was actually doing this, and every time we have another scene, I'm just like, Veronica, what are you doing?
Oh, she was doing it. She was doing it to test him, to see how he'd react.
No, I know, but, like, I was like, wait, is this real? What's happening? But it wasn't. No. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
Oof. And that is the halfway mark. Let me talk to you guys about Patreon real quick. It's a service in which you can donate to some of your favorite creators. Ours is patreon.com/theaficionados, and we'd really appreciate your help over there. So we have several tiers that I'm sure you guys have heard of before, and I have a free trial available on our Patreon for the $1 level. It used to be a month, but apparently they're taking it down to 7 days for some reason, so...
Oh, that's not as good.
Sorry if I advertise it as a month, but it's only 7 days now for some reason.
That's not your fault. That's Patreon's fault.
Yeah. So yeah, please help us out. And if not, check out our small businesses, which are all in the description. And if not, just recommend us to a friend, because that's free and it still helps.
Yeah.
Love you.
Just so everyone's clear, I am eating a cinnamon bun right now because I feel like I'm going to pass out if I don't eat. So if you hear a fork from time to time, roll with it.
Yeah, we're just people.
No. We are just women who are bad at remembering to eat. Okay. Ready?
Yep.
The next day at school, Betty helps Reggie with his homework. He says she doesn't have to, but Betty explains that it's one of her vixen duties, along with baking him cookies. Reggie says she doesn't have to do that either. Betty explains that she was forced to join the vixens as punishment for being horny. So yes, she does have to do all of that. She tells him about the peep show and flashing the camera on live TV. Reggie is very uncomfortable. He relieves Betty of her vixen duties and walks away.
This is definitely something to say to someone that you literally just met. You know, like, who you don't know how they're going to react about this. Like, Reggie is clearly not the type to be like, nice.
I was like, Betty,
you know,
you just met him this morning. Yeah. A little discretion, maybe.
Like, I'm like, does she think he'd be, like, into it? Like, I wonder, it's because, like, a lot of the dude, like, I think that she likes Reggie because he's, like, really handsome and cool. And all the other dudes around here have been like, ooh, nice. Like, even, like, last episode, like, that Troy guy who she hardly even knew was, like, into it, you know? So I wonder if that was her thing, is that she thought that he would be into it and then he was not.
Well, Veronica has also been teaching her to be more sexually forward. So I think she thought that this would, like, either, one, be a really funny conversation and he was like, that's not funny. Or two, she was hitting on him and he was like, I'm not into that.
Betty, you gotta know your audience, babe.
He is just so much more than he can handle. You know who can handle Betty? Veronica.
I...
I did think that Lily did an incredible job in this scene, though, with, like, the, like, flustered moment where she was, like, she was great. Lily was great in this scene.
She was like, I have made a miscalculation.
And I know that Reggie is just sort of, like, awkward in that way and everything, but I also was just like, hi, Ace Reggie. Welcome to the party.
Be like, yeah, I might be into this.
He's like, oh, I don't know about that. I gotta go, bye. I was like, oh, he's relatable.
But it's also, like, sort of, like, the same thing that he's been held up on is he wants to be careful, like, getting especially too close to, like, white students because of how badly he would burn. And then this white girl just sits down and is like, here's all of the weird sexual things I've been into lately. If I were Reggie, I would be like, I'm leaving.
He's like, I'm gonna be honest. Stonewall was a boys' school, and I know, like, two girls, period, and one of them's my mom.
Yeah.
So, like, I really can't talk to you right now.
Oh, God. Bless his heart.
He's just a baby.
So Reggie heads to the gym to shoot baskets. Archie walks in and invites him to lunch, but he declines.
The only thing I had about this scene was just that, like, this outfit of Reggie sucks so much compared to the farm outfit. What happened? It's, like, basically the same outfit, but what's different?
The prep vibes.
The vibes. Yeah. Truly the vibes. Yeah.
The disheveledness is so much more attractive than the prepness.
It's true. Yeah.
Tony tells Tabitha and Clay that she's thinking of starting a club that publishes a journal for Riverdale High's black students. It will focus on black voices and writing. They love this idea, and Clay says that he'd love to publish some of his work there. Tabitha asks if she'd do it on top of cheerleading, but Tony tells her that she quit. She explains that she only joined the Vixens because she had a crush on Cheryl, but it's over now, so she wants to focus on this. Clay asks what happened with Cheryl, and Tony says they're too different to be together. Cheryl is rich and white, and it would be impossible to figure out. Clay argues that it's hard, but it's not impossible, and he and Kevin are also very different. He says you have to be willing to communicate and get to know each other. Tony says they're both preppies, so it's different for them, and Clay says it depends on how much you like the person.
Mm-hmm. What did you think about this?
I loved it. I'm chewing here. I love this scene. I'm white, so, like, there's only so much I can speak on something.
Of course.
But I do think I liked the nuance in here. I liked that it was a conversation that it wasn't using 2023 ideology or, like, buzzwords, which this show, like, falls prey to a lot. It was more subtly handled. And I like that Clay was like, listen, I completely understand all of your concerns. And I get that because I'm also in a relationship with a white person. Mm-hmm. But you can make it work so long as you put the work in and don't lose hold of your own values.
Yeah.
Because, like, at the end of the day, like, they are black, and they are in the 50s, and this is something that they have to take into consideration every second of every day, especially if they're dating a white person.
It always feels like this show is like, okay, we have to pick our struggles. We either have to have an episode that's about blackness or is about being gay. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, we can't do both, which is like, but gay black people in the 50s did have to do both, though.
And that's why I'm a little confused why they decided to just straight up be like, Tony and Clay could so casually talk about dating people of their same, like, I guess same gender or same whatever. They could just so casually talk about being gay, and this was at no point a revelation to Tabitha, which of course you could say as shorthand for Tabitha already knew. But there is a conversation to be had here about them being gay and black in the 50s. Mm-hmm. And I think the show is afraid of that.
Yeah, I think so. So I thought, you know, Tony's idea about this journal and everything, I said, that's great. That's awesome. Like, that is not something that I am saying they did wrong or anything.
No, it's absolutely.
However,
such a great outlet.
Yeah. Meta and I were talking about it, and Meta was like, okay, Tony literally just outed Cheryl, though.
I didn't think about that.
Like, she could have said, this girl that I like, but she named Cheryl, you know? And, like, even if you're friends with these people and you trust them, first of all, you shouldn't out people. And second of all, you're still in public. I don't see these gay students talking about this even in public, just in hushed voices even, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, it does kind of pick which struggle it wants to work with. And
yeah,
while I am like, oh, like, there is way more discussion to be had about being queer at this time, I do really appreciate that they also recognized that they needed a place for black students to express themselves that had nothing to do with their white partners or their white classmates or their white teachers. It was purely a creative outlet to both discuss, like, you know, current events and to write poetry and to really talk about what it's like to be black in the 50s. And I really like this idea. And I like that they decided to have Cheryl both like, later, of course, understand that, like, yeah, part of the issue between them is that she's white, but that all she can do as that person is to be the best ally possible.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think that at least was well done to me.
Yes, exactly. And, like, even though we're both queer, we're both white women. Yeah. So, like, I would love to hear the opinions of other queer Black people on this scene, for sure.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm just like really shout out to Kevin and Clay for like seemingly being so healthy. At least Clay is like super mature about, you know, I mean, he like Kevin just came out recently, right? So it's realistic that Kevin would like not be as comfortable with it as Clay is, but it's really nice to see how mature Clay is about it.
Yeah, Clay's been out there a while.
So Blanche said, I love this scene. Also, by Tabitha real, the way Clay and Tony are so openly talking about their relationships just confirms it. It doesn't matter who the person is. If I'm gay in 1955, there's no way I'm discussing it with anyone unless I know they're also gay.
Mm, that's actually a fair thing to think about.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's either that or it's like a demonstration of allyship within like their student group or... Either way, though, yeah, by Tabitha, I would be super into.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back at the Babylonium, Kevin tells Veronica that she's coming on way too strong with Clay. He says Clay would never say anything, but it's inappropriate. Veronica argues there's nothing wrong with flirting in the workplace. Ronnie, incorrect. Because Clay isn't even interested.
Yeah, Blanche literally put in here.
Yes, there is, Ronnie. You're his boss.
Yes, there is, Ronnie. You're his boss.
There is. Kevin outs Clay and himself and says neither of them are attracted to any women. Veronica explains that she knew it, and she says she was only flirting to test if she was right. She asks, are they into girls, like, at all, though? And Kevin says no, and asks if she's okay with this. And let me just quote her next line, because I have questions about this. Absolutely. Kevin, the only thing better than having a hunky boyfriend is having hunky friends who are boys. The thing is, I've always had more fun going out with Tony and Tabs than, say, Steve and Dennis. Yeah.
So Blanche wrote, is she saying she's bi here? She's basically saying she prefers girls' company to boys and that she has more fun with girls. And also, if you have hunky friends who are boys, you get to enjoy their good looks without having to be intimate with them. Whereas with a boyfriend, you would have to. Well, have to. I don't know. This was my interpretation of what she said. I've read Veronica as bi since the pilot anyway, and I'm curious to hear your guys' thoughts.
That was my initial assumption as well. Was like, oh my god, you know, that she's implying that she's bisexual. I think what actually she's implying is that gay men are one of the girls. And she would prefer to hang out with Tony and Tabitha or effeminate gay men than straight men.
But I also totally agree that Veronica has always read as bi. Like, I always bring this up, but like episode 3 when like Betty walked out in the wig at the hot tub where they were like gonna, I don't know, drown Clay or not Clay, what's his name? Chuck, or like cook him or something, whatever they were gonna do. Veronica was like, hello.
Yeah, I think the thing about this show is because you could pair up anyone with everyone, I think that everyone's a little bit queer-coded.
Yeah. And I think that we're, like, getting canonically by Betty again in the 50s as well, based on the trailer and her, like, fantasizing herself kissing Veronica.
Exactly.
Just saying.
I'm on board this. Finally, our Veronica rights have manifested again. 7 seasons later.
Yeah.
Anyway, Veronica says she's so excited and that this town is now starting to feel like home because Hollywood is gay.
I loved Kevin being like, he is so not into you. He's my boyfriend.
Stay away from my boyfriend.
He's mine. And then she says flutterbums again, which I'm like, whatever. Okay.
It was their word of the week.
This made me laugh so much because in the trailer, we're all talking about Reggie and Veronica says, he's a hunk. And she wasn't even talking about Reggie. She was talking about Clay.
She was talking about, yeah. Listen.
This whole time, that was so funny.
I love a misleading trailer.
We had, like, early seasons, Kevin was, like, biphobic. Do you recall this?
Oh, of course.
And so, like, the fact that she's like, well, is he, like, kind of into girls? Kevin's like, no! I don't think they were trying to do that, but I was also like, oh, biphobic Kevin is back.
Aw, bless his heart.
I also think it's nice for Kevin to be like, finally, someone supports me, like, enthusiastically. Like, I feel like Clay and Veronica are, like, the only people who are, like, enthusiastically being like, this is awesome for you, yay. Because even Archie is like, it's okay, Kevin, I still like you, you know? Like, I don't hate you or anything. And Betty even is just like, it's okay, I forgive you. But Veronica and Clay are, like, so excited and happy, you know?
Listen, I am a gay woman, but I know that there are few bonds more important in this world than a teenage gay man and his straight female best friend.
Yeah.
Okay? This is what we need. Even if she's not straight. It's a sacred bond.
The only other thing that I wanted to say about this is, like, her line about going out with Tony and Tabs. I don't think Veronica knows Tabitha.
I mean, like, she must. Oh my god, wait, oh my gosh, well, she's new in school.
Literally, she's new in school and then Tabitha left.
Oops!
Yeah, so that's just an oops, I think. They were like, ooh, an alliteration, Tony and Tabs, you know. And I'm like, I don't think Veronica knows her, but okay.
The script supervisor was like, they don't know each other. And someone was like, but it rhymes!
But it rhymes. No, it does. But it's cute. It sounds good.
But it's an alliteration. I know what rhyming is. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
Me dunking on the script supervisor and then just immediately dunks on myself. I had that coming. Anyway, support the WGA strike.
Yeah.
Okay. At basketball practice, Julian makes an announcement and says tomorrow his parents will be hosting their annual Bulldog Booster basketball mixer. Try saying that 5 times fast.
Okay, whew. Bulldog Booster Basketball Mixer. Bulldog Booster Oh, yeah, you're right, you win.
I was, like, so scared to pronounce this phrase.
I said basketball. Ugh.
Basketball.
Humiliating.
So, basically a party. And then this year, there will also be a fundraiser to build a new gym. What's wrong with your gym?
So usually not a fundraiser, I guess.
What's wrong with your gym, bestie? It looks fine to me.
They just want to build new stuff so that they can name it the Clifford Blossom Gym.
Okay, you know what? That is uncomfortably accurate, actually.
Yeah.
Fangs needs to know if the cheerleaders are coming, and Julie's like, yeah, so dress nice.
He's literally like, I didn't even ask them, but they, like, are coming.
They're definitely coming. I mean, he was right.
Yeah.
Uncle Frank glares at him to continue. Julian adds that it'll be also a welcome for Reggie.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have nothing to add to this scene.
What I have to add is...
it's basically just information.
I hate this kid.
Yeah.
Reggie walks into the locker room to find Archie, who says that the Blossom parties are always fun and he should come. Archie, you have been to Blossom parties. You know that this is a lie.
It's true.
Archie, you dated a Blossom. You know that that was unfun.
And it was bad. Yeah.
Like, bless her heart because he was her beard, but, like, come on now.
Uh-huh.
Archie being someone's beard is just, it's still to this day one of my absolute favorite things the show has ever done.
Archie himself needs a beard.
That's correct. Reggie says no, and he is going to be focused on getting a scholarship from the NCAA. I love this because I went to a basketball school. No, I didn't.
Uh-huh.
I love this because my mom went to a basketball school. We lived in a basketball town, and mm-hmm. we were deeply, like, to this day, the only sports thing that I truly care about is college men's basketball.
Yeah.
Because I was brainwashed as a child. But we went to Gonzaga, and so we were Gonzaga Bulldog supporter.
Ooh.
They always make it to the Sweet 16. Like, they always make it into, like, March Madness, and then they never win. It hurts my heart. I just want my boys to get a win. All right. So Archie asks, why can't he just have fun, and why can't he meet anyone halfway? And Reggie... just absolutely, this is such a good conversation. Reggie says no one on the team will step towards him and that Archie just hasn't been listening. He explains that when he was recruited for Stonewall Prep, he was excited, but he never belonged there. We cut to a scene of him in the Stonewall Rock.
Actually, here, let me comment it, because this is a long scene. So
let's
stop here. I think this is so smart that Archie's like, why don't you meet anyone halfway? And Reggie's like, even if I took a step forward, no one's coming toward me. If I wanted to do anything, I would have to take 2 steps forward. And that's always how it is.
Archie's perception of taking steps is white is the default. Bullying is the default. You must acclimate to that. And Reggie's saying that's not what equality is. Equality is that I don't get fucking bullied.
I can't meet anyone halfway if no one's meeting me halfway. That's not what halfway is.
Exactly. And I love this season for Archie is very much Archie learning how to be a good ally.
Yeah, and it's true.
They don't pull punches with it. Like, they let Archie make these pretty big mistakes.
And be wrong. Yeah.
Yeah, they let Archie be wrong. And he takes the L with grace. He never gets mad. He doesn't understand, but he never gets mad. He always stops and thinks, okay, I didn't understand this because of who I am, but that's okay. I don't have to be mad that I don't understand it. I just have to learn.
I honestly feel like it's really comics, Archie. I think it's great.
It is. It totally is. And I saw this really wonderful TikTok a couple weeks ago talking about tolerance and how we learn and unlearn toxic thinking. And they did it through a metaphor of an art gallery where there is a piece up and two men look at it, and one man looks at it and he says, I don't understand this, but I think it's beautiful. And even though I don't get it, I think that it is art. Mm-hmm. And the guy next to him says, I don't understand this and I hate it. And I,
because I don't understand it. Yeah.
I don't understand it. I hate it. I don't want it hanging here. I don't think it's art. I think it's a perversion and I think that it should be taken down. And it's very much like, that's the perfect little metaphor for how to learn how to be a good person, especially if you are born white and cisgender.
Yeah.
And like, I just really like that that's Archie's storyline this season. It's very much him learning how to not only listen and support people who are not like him, but then to not speak over them.
Yeah.
It's beautifully done. And I'm very confused about it because this is Riverdale.
Yeah.
So how is this deeply important conversation that is being had in a really relatable, understandable way happening on Riverdale?
Yeah.
Hell froze over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pigs flying.
I didn't know cops could fly.
Some of them can.
They shouldn't.
It's like the Air Force or something. I don't know.
OT. Yeah. Abolish the military-industrial complex. Thank you. I have spoken.
Bye.
So anyway, back to Reggie and Archie. We cut to a scene of him in the Stonewall locker room where Brett is there, which... I'm going to beat the shit out of you.
I was so excited.
You just scared the shit out of me.
I wasn't even facing the microphone.
Oh my God. I can't. I love this energy for Brett. This is a TikTok moment of you just losing your fucking mind over some white guy.
He's not good. He's a bad person. But I was so happy to see him.
You are insane. You're like, my Blorbo is here. Blorbo from my shows.
What?
Oh my God. You have not been on Tumblr in a quick minute, huh?
No.
Okay.
I just post my GIFs.
No, Tumblr culture is, this is a couple years now.
I know about Goncharov, though.
Okay, exactly. So, like, you can have Blorbo from Goncharov. The okay. Blorbo is just, like, your favorite character, but also, like, he's just kind of just a guy.
Oh, yeah.
Blorbo from my show.
Yeah, I got a museum of Blorbos.
You got a whole army of Blorbos, and they're all little gremlin men.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Brett is there, which Blanche has written as Gay Brett, but... I just don't think Brett is good enough to be gay.
It's true. However, if you re-watch season 4, like, I still think about that time when, like, Archie showed up and, like, shoved Brett up against, like, it was, like, up against, like, the bunk bed or whatever, and there was something going on there.
I was like, why was that so sexual?
And then he was like, he said something about, like, don't hold your breath, Elmo, or something like that. It was so good.
Oh my God.
I made that gif. I don't know where it is, but it was good.
Listen, it's problematic, but if there's one thing I'm going to do, it's want the villains to be gay.
Uh-huh.
Which I know is so bad, but I'm like, oh, but it's so much more fun when they're gay.
Yeah.
So Brett pulls an incredibly racist and mean, quote unquote, billion quotes joke on him, using a lot of slurs that we are just not going to repeat because we have manners.
No. Yeah, it was poor. It was bad.
He says that was only his first day and that for the rest of his time there, people were terrible and ran him off the team. That's why he's not opening up to anyone here so that no one will have a chance to humiliate him again. Archie says that he's sorry that happened, but Riverdale isn't like that. And Reggie says, isn't it? And leaves. And I'm like, yes, this is how you learn!
Literally, you're watching Julian be like that, though.
Yep. Because Archie wants to believe that they're better than that. And that's like, it goes all the way back to Featherhead? Featherhead being like, well, this is an integrated school, so we have no more work to do. And I'm like, you have nothing but work to do.
Exactly. Yeah. I thought it was so funny that I literally, like, the guest star, like, Sean Deppner was in the guest star, and I was like, oh my God, he's here. Oh my God, he showed up. Oh my God, they've been talking about Stonewall, and he's here. He's here. He's here. And then he showed up, did one horrible thing, and then that's all he did the whole time.
I'm like, oh, Robin, I'm so sorry, but also that's fucking funny.
It is funny, but I also was just like, wait, so is that like the Brett Easter egg and he's never gonna show up again?
100%.
They were like, Sean, can you, like, show up for, like, a day, maybe? Like, maybe 3 hours, and then that's it. And also, you're gonna be a terrible person. And he's like, yeah, no problem, yeah.
It's Vancouver. It's not like you gotta drive far to be on the show anyway.
And, yeah, I mean, I already said it, but, like, Archie's like, Riverdale's not like that. And he's just, I'm just like, have you not seen, like, literally a bunch of evidence that Riverdale is like that already? Like, Julian has literally already said garbage stuff to him in front of you.
It's exactly what Reggie says later, which is that Archie is naive, because Archie's a well-intentioned boy, and he doesn't want to believe that Riverdale is like that. But the first lesson in unlearning these things and learning about systemic oppression is recognizing everywhere is like that.
Yeah, exactly.
And just because you don't want it to be true doesn't mean that it isn't. So, like, of course Archie learns that lesson with Kevin. So he learns, oh, Riverdale's homophobic. I got to do my best to make sure that that gay people are protected here. And now he has to go, oh, Riverdale's also racist. So now I have to do my best to support all of my friends who are people of color by POC. And it's just, it's a lovely journey for him.
Yeah.
It's also a really lovely journey for Reggie.
Yeah. The other thing that I had was, like, somebody give Charles Melton an Emmy, because, like, the, like, tears that aren't quite gonna spill over of him, like, he's like, I'm stoic, I cannot cry moment. I was just like, wow. This is good stuff.
He's doing a great job. Yeah. And I really like that they decided to have him not play it as trying to assimilate and trying to be nice to everyone. He's like, I will not tolerate intolerance, and I'm not going to be nice about it. I love that.
Right. It's not like he's like, can everybody be nice to me? Or like, Archie, can you get everyone to be nice to me? Like, he's literally just like, I'm alone, and I know that. So stop trying to make me think that I'm not alone, because as soon as I let my guard down, I'm going to get hurt again.
And I'm not going to coddle you.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to say, hey, maybe it's not like that. It is like that. This is about racism. I am being treated badly, and I will not comfort you about that.
Yeah.
And I love it. After school, Tony stops Cheryl and at Tony tops Cheryl. That's just a fact. I'm leaving that in.
All right.
Tony stops Cheryl and asks how she is. And Cheryl's like, I'm a bottom still, in case you were wondering.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cheryl says she's holding it together because of the Vixens. Tony tells her about the idea.
Oh, yay.
Because of the Vixens. Tony tells her about her idea for a Black Students Literary Society and asks if she could help secure funding. Cheryl says that it's a great idea and she'll request it, but it has to go through Featherhead, so he may not approve it, but she'll try. Tony says it's okay and she appreciates it, and maybe they could do a bake sale if Featherhead doesn't okay it, to which Cheryl says she'll contribute her cherry scones. She starts to leave, sweet. And yeah, very sweet. Also, the cherry imagery for Cheryl, I will always love it.
Of course. Yes.
Literally, oh my god, Candy's runway this week. Did you watch Drag Race this week?
I haven't seen it yet. It just came out yesterday, and I have been editing the Oakley, so.
Candy's fruit runway, you will then understand why I'm like, oh my god, right, Candy Muse. It's cherries, it's so good.
Got it. I've only seen Heidi's so far, which was also really good, so.
Yeah, Heidi and Kana's low-key the best, both robbed. Mm. This season, kind of bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. It feels like they're kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel for the All-Stars this season.
Because they are, because All-Stars should only be, like, every 4 years.
Yeah.
Our star should not be every year.
No.
This has been our Drag Race segue during a Riverdale podcast. Okay. Cheryl starts to leave, but then asks Tony if she broke up with her because she's white. Tony says that there were a lot of reasons, but yes, that was part of it. Cheryl doesn't reply, but says she'll try her best with Featherhead and leaves. I like this scene a lot.
I feel like it's nice. If you haven't seen the episode, so basically she asks for this funding. Cheryl is like, oh crap, everything is bad here and I should do everything that I can do for the Black students or like the people of color at the school. And so she gets the funding like without Featherhead's approval. And then Tony says, thank you. And I'm willing to give it another shot. And I know that she's saying I'm willing to give it another shot because like Cheryl did this kind thing and is like being an ally and like, etc. But I can't help but think that she's like, hey, Cheryl, I wasn't going to talk to you, but now I need money from you. And then it was like, hey, Cheryl, I'll give you another chance, but just because you got me money, you know?
No, I don't think that's it at all.
Yeah. It's just not- sort of like, it was an undertone that I caught, that's all.
No, I think the undertone was very much, it was an olive branch. Because Tabitha and Clay just told Cheryl, like, it's not impossible. You just have
or just told Tony, yeah.
Or just told Tony that being with Cheryl isn't impossible. It's just going to be hard work. And so Tony's sitting there and she's like, you know what? This is the perfect avenue for me to extend an olive branch to Cheryl, to work together again, and then to eventually tell her, like, hey, one of the obstacles in our relationship is the fact that I'm Black and you're white. And so I think this was Tony's way of doing that.
Yeah, I get, and I get that from Tony. I guess, like, if I was Cheryl, it's sort of, you know, since I wasn't there for that conversation between Tabitha and Clay, it just sort of feels like, hi, I need money.
I guess I really didn't interpret it that way.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think to Cheryl, it would be a compliment that Tony is still able to ask her for help.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Okay.
You know, because like all Cheryl wants to do is help Tony, regardless of whether or not they're together, because they're freaking end game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. At the Blossom Party, Betty and Archie run into each other because they're in the game. Betty tells him she's only a cheerleader because Werther said it'll help her burn off her energy. And you know what? Blanchard's right. Just buy the girl a vibrator. Jesus.
Yeah.
But she probably won't be a cheerleader for much longer because once Alice finds out about all the vixens being paired up with the players, she's going to freak out. And Blanche's note says, and I would have liked to see that. And I'm like, bestie, me too. I just want to see Machen's face.
I'm just like pissed because the blurb for this episode was like, Alice makes Betty join the vixens. And we're like, oh great, we're getting Alice. And then she wasn't in the episode.
Oh my god, it said Alice makes Betty join the vixens?
Yeah.
Oh my god. Just pay Machen. Anyway, Uncle Frank eyes Archie talking to Betty and beckons him over. Because he's like, that's not a good idea. And I'm like, it's a good idea.
When I first watched it, I thought that Fangs was, like, talking to Midge's parents. And then she was, like, looking over at him. But it turns out when I rewatched it, I was like, those are just some random dudes.
Oh my god, I didn't realize that.
It's just some dudes. All right. Betty says, Archie says howdy doody to Betty, which I thought was very cute.
He's such a nerd.
And, you know, every time Betty and Archie get together, they talk about how grown-ups know nothing and they think that we're stupid. And I just thought it was, like, so cardigan coded. Like, it's very, I knew everything when I was young.
Bro, I was just thinking that?
Right. Plus, her name is Betty, which is, like, the character in the Taylor Swift cinematic universe who is singing Cardigan, so...
But there's also, like, when we were young, they assume you know nothing. When you're young, they assume you know nothing.
Exactly!
Exactly!
Yeah. Yeah.
Just adding some Taylor Swift flavor to the Riverdale cinematic universe.
Cardigan is probably my favorite Taylor Swift song of all time, and so now I have to make a fan video.
We were literally just talking about, I watched a TikTok where it was like, the Doctor as different Taylor albums.
Oh, yeah.
And they very incorrectly said that My Boy 12 is, Speak Now.
Uh-huh.
And Sam was like, no, 12 is Folklore Evermore. And I'm like, exactly, because Cardigan makes so much sense for him! Thank you. Uncle Frank is talking with the Blossoms, who commend Archie for sharing a room with Reggie. They suggest he's sacrificing so much for bunking with him. And Archie's just like, I like having a new friend.
He's my buddy, actually.
Penelope calls him a necessary evil so they can win the season. Clifford agrees. And I'm like, Queen, Clifford, here's the thing. Before you make fun of anyone or look down on them, you need to check your lace front.
Your wig is a necessary evil.
Your wig, it's not necessary and it is evil.
Not even necessary.
Like, bitches who cannot lay their wigs properly should not be talking about anyone else. Thank you. True. Clifford agrees and says he was skeptical about recruiting someone who's Korean and asks Archie if Reggie realizes the opportunity they're giving him. It's wonderfully evil in its insidious...
Hard to watch.
It's very hard to watch, but it is exactly how they sound even now.
And here's the thing. May I commend the actors who are playing these terrible, terrible people? Because, like, it's hard to go in there and, like, speak so convincingly on something that you don't believe in yourself, like yourself as a person.
Yeah.
You know? Somebody's gotta do it so that we can tell these stories and that we can, like, make these statements. Exactly. Somebody has to be the bad guy. And so, like, they're doing it convincingly. It is hard to watch.
It's very hard to watch. Yeah. It's also well done in terms of both micro and macro aggressions. Like, I don't want to sit there and be like, the racism's really well done. But the thing is that it is, because it's the insidiousness of how subtle and how not subtle it is that will drive the message home. And it's also like how the current, like, conservative movement speaks about other people.
Yeah.
And it's really done without being overly heavy-handed. Like, they're not upstraying, like, saying, like, he's different, he sucks. And, like, you know, the mustache twirling one, it's much more capitalist insidious. And I think it's, yeah. It is well done. And what's also well done is Archie just straight up being like, oh, you guys are insane.
He's like, oh, this is bad.
Yeah.
This is worse than I thought. Reggie was right.
Yeah. Archie says, yeah, like, the only reason that Reggie isn't there is because he doesn't want to fall behind on his schoolwork, which should be commendable, right? But Clifford says,
yeah,
that's nice, but he doesn't care about that. So long as he wins the championship for the Bulldogs, and he and his family won't face any trouble. He's just a tool.
Like, honestly, he's like, well, if he's not good, then his family will face trouble, you know? Like,
yeah.
Clifford's like, this is a threat.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
It's crazy because it's exactly how it sounds now, which sucks. Archie's disgusted at how racist they are and excuses himself.
Yeah.
And of course, now he has learned, yeah, Riverdale is like that.
Yeah. I don't really care for Penelope's dress, I wanted to say.
Oh!
Thought it was weird.
You know what? I'm gonna love that.
You know what? It was high camp, but it was not cute. I didn't care for it.
I'm gonna allow this. Oh, I love that we get to talk about wardrobe.
Yeah.
You know?
And then Frank is really short, and I honestly think that works.
It does.
With Archie looks down on him, and I think that works.
I think it's extremely funny that all of these people are styled in the most unflattering way.
Right.
Which is just so subtly says, racism is ugly.
I bet that Ryan Robbins isn't actually even that short. I think that KJ's probably just really tall.
Oh, that's 100%. Okay. We pan to Cheryl listening in on her family's discussion, and she is also disgusted. I love this. The children shall inherit the earth.
Yes. Oh, KJ's only 5'11".
What?
So he's also not as tall as Cole.
In my head, KJ is a full head taller than
Cole. Yeah, right. The only... Okay, so originally I was like, wait, what does this even have to do with Cheryl? But I realized that that's just her realizing how bad it is and how much she wants to get the funding for Tony.
Yeah, exactly.
So that totally makes sense. The only other thing is that, like, they're talking to this random boy who just happens to be in the conversation with them named Dennis.
Who is this guy?
Who are you? He's not, like, a comics character. I checked. I have no idea who this Dennis person is. I do not know. I have no memory of him. Let me go on the Riverdale wiki. I wonder.
Do you think he's the milkman?
I don't think so, because at least the milkman that we saw last episode was, like, a full adult person.
Oh, all right. He was listening in, and I was like, are you gonna, like, play a role? He might be someone for later.
Yeah. There is no, I have nothing on Dennis from the wiki. Nothing on Dennis.
Okay, I think he's definitely someone that's gonna play, I mean, it's Riverdale, so who knows? He's definitely someone who's gonna play a role later, because we have our rebellious Gen Zs, but you also have to have your complicit Gen Zs, like Julian. Yep. So,
yeah.
It's possible.
Yeah, maybe he's on the basketball team. I don't know. He definitely is. Really been paying attention. Yeah.
He definitely is. Reggie shows up at the Babylonium, and Veronica is thrilled to see him. He says he honestly forgot she worked here. I love his lack of tact. It's so funny.
Yeah.
She corrects him, and she's like, actually, I don't work here. I own it. And then she gives him his popcorn for free, and Reggie leaves. Kevin calls him rude, but Veronica doesn't care. She's into it.
She's into it. She's like, oh my god, he forgot about me. Ah, it's so hot.
I also kind of love that, like, Kevin's like, he's rude, and she's like, he's not rude, because here's the thing, I have been harassing him a little.
It's true. And then she starts talking about Moby Dick in regards to him, and I was like, what are you talking about?
Oh my god. I feel...
What are you doing?
Charles and Camila must have had a pretty amicable breakup, yes. Because the way they play this is so funny, and you can tell they're, like, not hating it.
I agree. I think that's true. The only other thing I had about this was that, Charles Melton, I love you so much, and I know it's probably the character, but can you enunciate a little bit more, man?
I think, yeah, it probably is the...
What are you saying at any given time?
No. Oh, bless. Okay. One of Robin's other notes is just, V, cool it, man.
Yeah, just cool it, dude.
She's too horny to function.
You're doing a lot.
She's too horny to function. Tabitha loves Jughead's train car because it's just like the Orient Express. Jughead agrees.
Which is exactly what he said.
It's so... They're meant for each other. They're meant for each other. I do not care about the Bughead endgame. Listen, due respect to Bugheads, I get it. Like, there was so much history. Also, the actors dated. Yeah. I will never deny that, but here's the thing. It's these two. They're meant for each other.
Mm-hmm.
Jughead agrees and sets out coffee for both of them. She says that she brought him a gift and pulls out a book of short stories, Dark Water, Voices from Within the Veil by W.E.B. Du Bois. She explains the author is one of her favorites and is a civil rights activist. Jug asks which story he should start with, and Tabitha recommends a story called The Comet. Is this a coincidence?
I don't think so.
I'm like, are we finally getting some crumbs where we get back to the universe with our characters in them?
So me and Meta think, Because so do you remember at the beginning of the, where I was just like, oh, and then our real Tabitha is going to take over for the Tabitha that's leaving, and then we're still going to have, like, me and Meta think that, like, this is our Tabitha. Our theory is that this is our Tabitha, and the actual 50s Tabitha is still off yonder doing stuff.
Listen, if you're wrong, I'm going to be sad because this is a great idea.
Like, she's literally, like, the comet, hello?
The comet, and, like...
And why she's, like, totally okay with just hearing Tony talk about Cheryl and stuff. And she's just like, yeah, we all know that Tony and Cheryl are together. Like, we get it.
Yes.
I don't know.
Oh, my God.
I don't know.
Listen, that might be too slick for this show, but I'm going to manifest it anyway.
But it would have been dope.
Yeah.
Well, they're talking about sci-fi. And what's more sci-fi than this time travel stuff? Like, come on.
Exactly. Interesting. Okay. So here's the story of the comet. It's about a comet that hits New York City and kills everybody except for an interracial couple. She also says that this is the first time an interracial couple was depicted in sci-fi. Jughead says that sounds terrific and he can't wait to read it. Tabitha suggests that maybe they could both read it aloud tonight and he says that sounds great.
Dude, I know that you have stuff to say about this.
I have so much to say.
But I just wanted to say, first of all, Jughead's face absolutely lights up every single time he's talking to Tabitha and it is beautiful.
Cole's at his best when he's with her.
Truly. And also, like, it is a risk to be like, this is what I want to do for our date. We're sitting here and we are reading a book aloud to each other for like their second date ever. And the fact that he's into it is like so much. I'm just like, when can I do this? That sounds so fun.
It's such a sweet date idea. I absolutely love it.
It's beautiful.
It's nerds in love. It's everything. It's everything.
It was incredible. It was incredible. Now your stuff.
Okay. So I am so excited about Tabitha being really into sci-fi, especially this particular work and what it represents, because I know Tabitha is going to go bonkers 10 years from now when Star Trek comes out.
Yes.
Because Nichelle Nichols and like Uhura, they're going to be her jam. Like, it's going to be everything to her. And for a lot of people who don't know, Star Trek was the first television show and big piece of media to feature an interracial kiss, which is between Kirk and Uhura. And the reason that it happened is because William Shatner and Nichelle, they were like, okay, we're going to shoot this scene. And the writers did, of course, write it because the writers were very progressive at the time as well. Well, as progressive as you can be in the 60s. And the studio was a little uncomfortable with it. And they were like, oh, I don't know if we should put an interracial kiss on television. So let's shoot some without the kiss. And William Shatner, who I have beef with and we have mutual block on Twitter for many reasons, but his horniness and his cadness and his, you know, misogyny was an accidental ally moment because he decided he was going to ruin every take where they didn't kiss. So that the studio was absolutely forced to use the take where they did kiss, because in all of the other ones, he was making some face or he was being gross or like, you know, his eyes were doing weird stuff. And so that is how the first ever interracial kiss got on television, was because of William Shatner and Nichelle. And I'm just, oh, I cannot wait, because I know she's going to be a Trekkie, you know? She's going to love...
It's true. Oh, 100%.
She's gonna look at them. She's going to look at Kirk and Uhura and be like, that's me and Jughead. And then she's going to be like, actually, Kirk's in love with Spock and that's pretty clear. But that's okay. You know, I'm just... Yeah. Oh, I loved it.
I just like... It's so interesting because like never... It's like all this sci-fi stuff is really cool because like in the original timeline, you could not catch Jughead talking about Star Trek.
Which sucks because Jughead would love Star Trek.
Jughead's like cool, too cool. Yeah, exactly. That's why it's like weird is like Jughead's like only if like, I just feel like Jughead thinks he's too cool for Star Trek in the original timeline. You know what I mean?
Which is like such a bold thing for him, because here's the thing. Jughead is too cool for Star Wars.
He's weird. He's a weirdo. He loves Star Trek. Yeah.
Jughead is cool, just about as cool enough for Star Trek. And I say that as a Trekkie, okay?
Yeah.
Star Trek is where, that's his bread and butter.
Mm-hmm. So, other stuff about this scene. Blanche wrote, they are so cute. Number one, hot dogs in the background of this scene. And I had to point it out, which is great because me and Meta were watching it and Meta was like, oh my gosh, there's hot dog in the background. And I was like, oh my God, write it down just in case Blanche didn't see. So I'm glad that Blanche caught it.
Bro, this scene was so dark, I could not even see hot dog.
Right. And two, there's also a moment after Tab says the name of the story is the comet where Jughead looks like, that sounds familiar. God, I want to go back to the future so bad. Me too.
Gotta go back. Period. In time.
Mm-hmm. So Darkwater's Voices from Within the Veil is a literary work by W.E.B. Du Bois. Published in 1920, the text incorporates autobiographical information as well as essays, spirituals, and poems that were all written by Du Bois himself. And
I want to read the comet. Is the comet real?
Yeah. The comet? Like the story?
Yeah.
Sure is. The Comet is a science fiction short story written by W.E.B. Du Bois in 1920. It discusses the relationship between Jim Davis, who was a black man, and Julia, who was a wealthy white woman. After a comet hits New York and unleashes toxic gases that kill everyone in New York, it isn't specified whether it's the entire state or just the city, except them. So, yeah, it's real.
I really want to watch this. Or, I really want to read it.
Read it.
I love sci-fi anthologies.
Yeah. And I just thought it was so interesting because this is, like, also an also extremely forward to be, like, let's spend the entire night together reading. But it's, like, in such a, like, a way better way than Veronica is doing. You know what I mean? Like,
it's so wholesome.
Because she knows her audience, too. And that's, like, also, like, Tabitha knows what she's doing, like, more than both Veronica and Betty right now. Because they're, like, she knows her audience.
Well, Tabitha knows how to woo a nerd. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, how do you, I mean, listen, as someone who also wooed a nerd,
yeah.
Because I'm married to my wife, and the way that we bonded was by writing fan fiction for a CW sci-fi show, and that's all the information I'm going to tell you.
Uh-huh.
This is so romantic to me.
Yeah.
It's so romantic. I love it so much, and they are endgame. I don't care what anyone says, they're endgame.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Archie comes home and Reggie, who's reading Super Duck in bed, asks how the night went. Archie says he doesn't want to talk about it and leaves to take a shower.
Archie's like, super bummer.
Archie's like, I just learned about racism for the first time, so I need to sit and process that for a couple business days.
I love seeing Reggie reading Super Duck because, like, he's probably Duck Creek named after my boy Super Duck, you know? Like, Reggie's just like, I'm from Duck Creek. I have to read every issue of Super Duck. It's sort of a thing.
Wait until he finds out who writes Super Duck.
Yeah, right. He's going to be like, wait.
Right? Hang on.
Jughead?
The Jughead Jones!
But I feel bad for Reggie because now it's like, he's like, oh, hey, Archie. And Archie's like, oh, I'm leaving. I don't want to talk about it. And Reggie's like, now I don't have any friends.
I honestly don't think Reggie gives a single shit.
Yeah.
I think Reggie's like, all right, you know whatever. What? Whatever you got going on, not my problem.
I really feel like Reggie's, like, out here feeling like this is just, like, something he has to do. Like, it's, like, work.
It is. It is work.
So that his family can be, yeah.
It 100% is. He considers this a job, and he's going to do the best possible job because this is how he gets the future that he wants.
Yeah.
That's my boy. Okay. The next day at practice, Julian is running things because Uncle Frank is in a meeting, which Blanche has written, Uncle Frank is in a stink bug meeting to meet with the other stink bugs in town. And I like it. I support it.
Probably the villain meeting.
I mean, they do meet like every Wednesday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they wear pink.
Pink is for cool people only.
It's true. It's just, you know, we wear pink on Wednesdays. So yeah.
On Wednesdays we wear, on Wednesdays we do beheadings according to Worf. There's a lot of Star Trek in this podcast. Sorry. Mm-hmm. This is not the audience for it. They play for a while and Julian is racist to Reggie. Archie straight up punches him in the face because what you should always do is
good for you.
Punch a Nazi.
Good for him.
He yells at the team that they don't have to be friends with Reggie, but they're all a team and they need to respect and look out for each other. And if they don't like that, they can leave because they're all in this together.
Yeah.
That was for you.
Good for them. Yeah. It was good. Yeah, honestly, Archie, good for you.
I'm really happy about this. When it happened, I was like, oh, that's fantastic. And then Archie is the one to point out later, hey, by the way,
I didn't even do it for you.
I know that you don't need me to do this for you. And I want you to know that, like, I'm not trying to make your life worse.
Yes.
Cheryl gives Tony an envelope of money. Tony says she can't believe Featherhead approved. And Cheryl says, well, she didn't mention it to him. The funds were for something else. But she found Tony's journal to be much more important. Tony thanks her, and when she goes to leave, she invites her to the dark room to talk about them maybe trying again. Cheryl, 100%, stole the bulldog money.
The bulldog money. Oh my god, you're a genius. I literally was like, wait, did they talk about what the money was for? Am I forgetting something? Yeah, she stole it from Clifford.
100% she did.
You're right.
Yeah.
Totally. Oh, you're completely right. Yeah. Okay, we figured that out.
if she didn't, and this never comes up again... No, she did.
Yeah.
She did.
Cheryl's dress is beautiful. I love her dress in the scene, unlike Penelope's dress from earlier. And I think it's funny that she's like, what are you doing after vixen practice? And she's like, nothing. And I'm like, Riverdale Grandstand doesn't exist. It existed last episode and that's it.
100%. Hello, it's Riverdale. We don't have continuity on this show. Get out of here.
No.
What are you, new here? Archie tells Reggie that he knows he doesn't need saving and that he punched Julian for himself and for the entire team. He says he didn't want to believe Reggie was right about the town, but now realizes they're just as screwed up as anywhere else. As a gesture of peace between the two, Reggie asks if he wants to go to Pop's on the way home.
Because he still hasn't tried it. It's beautiful. It's lovely. Great scene. And just Archie's out here with more chemistry with dudes. Like, he pick a dude, Archie will have chemistry with him, you know?
I think Archie and Betty would be happiest in a poly relationship with every gender.
Yeah,
Yeah.
Am I right?
Yes.
Is it poly? Is that right?
What do you mean? What do you mean?
Poly?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that the phrase?
Polyamorous? Yeah.
Thank you. I couldn't remember the last part of that.
Oh.
I was like, that's not it. No, it is. Okay. Jughead says in his narration that he and Tabitha stayed up all night reading together and discussing the stories because they're a bunch of nerds, and I just want everyone to know that me and my wife do this all the time. He goes back to Brad's apartment to tell him about it, only to find Sheriff Keller and the police hauling away his dead body. Jughead asks what happened, and Keller says Brad hung himself, a likely story, and left a note saying that he could no longer continue living this way. The episode ends. Living what way?
Yeah, that's what I mean, that's part of what makes Jughead suspicious as well. I like how, like, they have him in a body bag already, so, like, we didn't have to pay the actor to play him again. And yeah, I feel like that's confusing, especially to Jughead, because he's just like, well, he just agreed to be my mentor, you know? Like, this doesn't... And sometimes, you know, these things happen and nobody expects it, you know? That happens all the time.
100%. You can't always tell, but with him, absolutely not.
Yeah, but I totally understand being suspicious about something like this.
Yes.
Especially in a town like Riverdale.
Yeah, where people keep getting murdered.
Yeah. And so, you know, Jughead's like, not another father figure.
Oh no, guess he's gonna need his original one back.
Yeah, exactly. And Brad didn't get to meet Tabitha. And that's the tragedy, is that he didn't get to meet Tabitha. He was so close and he didn't get to, which
Bro,
is sad for him.
I would also be so sad to not meet Tabitha. She's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. The only other thing I had was that last episode, he said that he doesn't trust banks. And Jughead, you were there for that. You need to search that apartment. How much money's in that apartment?
Ooh, you know? That's a good idea.
But also, what's going to happen with his novel now? I wonder if Jughead steals it now. Now that he's dead, I wonder if Jughead steals it and publishes it now.
He could publish it posthumously. Posthumously?
That's true. I wonder if he will. Yeah.
He should.
Posthumously, yeah.
I hope he does, because I bet that book was amazing.
I bet it slaps.
And we did it!
We did it! Segments?
Segments.
All right. Our first segment is, what did Blanche think? Blanche's throat hurts this week, so she didn't send one. Which character needs a hug the most? Reggie.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to Reggie.
Yeah. Reggie needs it badly.
Yeah.
And my segment is, which MILF was the most badass?
Penelope.
I'm just going to give it to Mary, because she was there and she wasn't awful.
Yeah.
Please give me my good MILFs back. I miss them.
As for what is Sam shipping the most, she said, number one, Jugatha.
Oh, yeah.
And then she said honorable mention Shoni because she's insane, and honorable mention Betty and Reggie because she's simple and she likes to watch pretty people kiss.
That's my wife for you.
Yeah. Asexual Jughead? ? Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Why not?
Yeah. And now it's time for our best line award. My best line award goes to Archie and Reggie for...
My Uncle Frank said you played basketball for Stonewall Prep. What happened?
You writing a book?
And my favorite line award goes to Archie and Veronica for...
Yeah, he's gonna help turn things around for the Bulldogs.
Well, he's already turned my day around.
She's nasty.
And I'll definitely, I'm pretty sure Cheryl rolls her eyes after that, so I'll include that in the gift for sure.
Good. My favorite line award is actually Cheryl's eye roll.
Yeah. And Blanche's favorite line award goes to Jughead for...
Can we do a double-sized popcorn, a large cola with extra ice, two packs of the senior mints, a Butterflinger, a pack of those mint BOGOs, three Buccaneers, and a Skits Gap? Do you want anything?
I want you to know, if she hadn't picked that, I was going to pick that because it's so funny.
So good.
Yep.
As for the trailer, you watched said trailer, Brittany, or no?
But of course. This trailer said everybody's horny today.
So if I had to guess, I'm pretty sure this entire thing is a Betty fantasy because it's just Betty making out with people the entire time.
100%.
You know, I have complained in the past that like every trailer is just a bunch of sex stuff, but I also feel like they're just, they're hiding the whole rest of the episode. Like the Peep Show episode, the whole trailer was just the Peep Show that happened within the last like 5 minutes, you know? So like they're hiding something. And
I also think,
that's good because
the horny stuff is just easy clicks.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I was really hoping, because this episode is called the Betty and Veronica Double Digest, and Betty and Veronica, like, I was like, oh my god, I better see exclusively
Betty and Veronica double digest each other's tongues in their mouths.
I was like, I better see exclusively Betty and Veronica this episode. Like, I want it to like be two storylines. One is Betty, one is Veronica, or the whole thing is just one storyline of Betty and Veronica working together, because that's what a Betty and Veronica double digest is.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
I want so it, like, and I want there to be kissing, which I know there is, so this isn't an unreasonable request.
You need to, if you're going to call it Betty and Veronica double digest, step up to the plate and give me what I expect from a Betty and Veronica double digest.
Oh, those were the only ones I bought as a kid.
Yeah. I did that and the Jugheads.
That makes sense. And now you're ace and I'm gay.
There it is.
There you go.
So the blurb says, saving the Babylonium. After devising a plan to bring in some money at the Babylonium, Veronica is surprised to learn somebody may be sabotaging her. Elsewhere, after beginning sessions with Dr. Werthers, Betty begins to question his motives. So see, even the blurb is all about Betty and Veronica. So I'm like, hello. But yeah, so I wrote more sex stuff. Seriously, this is not what I wanted. I wanted a little caper that B&V solved together.
We might get it.
But we'll see. Who knows? So we have Werthers asking Betty how often she thinks about sex. And this whole thing is definitely just a bunch of fantasies. You've got like this, like, heavenly light coming down in all of them. So we have Betty and Jughead kissing in the hallway, Betty and Veronica kissing in the locker room, which is the classic that locker room. I hope that the boys' locker room also gets as much action as the girls' locker room does.
I also hope that.
Betty says, I would say an average amount. Then we see Betty making out with fangs on top of a car.
Betty is the horniest character that has ever lived, I think.
Lily's getting some action this episode.
Like, her entire plotline this season is just her being horny. And I'm like,
uh-huh.
Weird. But Lily seems to be having a good time, so I guess I gotta be fine with it.
Like, respect, but also, like, this is more than what Betty has always been, you know? Like, I hope that they continue to make it deeper than this.
Like, remember when Betty used to solve crime?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Then we see Betty naked making out with Reggie in the school showers.
Sure.
She says, what better way to understand a person than to understand their desires? And then we see Betty kissing Archie on top of a desk in front of the whole class who are all taking notes.
Well, I mean, they kind of...
So this is just a weird dream,
and
for sure.
Like, I like that each one kind of reflects who they are, because Betty and Archie making out in front of everyone, like, they are such voyeurs. They have such a voyeurism kink.
Uh-huh. It's true.
Yeah.
And Jughead's sitting there in the front row, and he's like, eh.
I guess. Where's Tabitha?
All right, you guys, thank you so much for listening.
Our music is Terminal by Goodoos Tunes.
And thanks to those who shared space with us while we recorded this podcast. That includes my dog for me.
He's a good boy. That includes my wife and our roommate, Emily.
Love it.
Thank you to Sheila Daly, aka Blanche, for writing our scene-by-scene notes. You are an angel sent from above.
Thank you so much. If you're a fan of The 100, we'd like to talk about that show too. We did seasons 4-7 as they were airing, and then we go back to do the good old days. So season 3 is done. We're in the middle of season 2, but we're on hiatus right now. So, hey, gives you time to catch up.
Neat. If you're a fan of Stranger Things, we'd like to talk about that show too. We are on season 4. We are currently on hiatus because Riverdale takes up so much of our time, which, what a humbling thing to say. But we will be continuing on with season 4, and, I am so excited for season 5. It's been delayed by the writer's strike, and that's good.
Yeah, because we need time to... First of all, it's good because the writers deserve more money. And second of all, I need more time to cover season 4.
Yeah.
If you're a fan of Lost, we'd like to talk about that show too. That is our only podcast that is ongoing while Riverdale comes out. We're on season 4 as well. And I am just so happy. That podcast is my pride and joy, and I would really appreciate it if you checked it out. It would mean a lot to me.
It's a good show. And if you're looking for something to watch during the writer's strike, watch Lost.
Check it out.
You can follow the Aficionados on Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram, and our new TikTok.
I would appreciate that. Like I said earlier, our Patreon is patreon.com/theaficionados. If you like what we do here, please consider donating. It is expensive with our money and expensive with our time, so we'd really appreciate your help over there. If not, check out our small businesses, and then just recommend us to a friend, because it's free. Thanks.
You can follow me on Twitter at @Britannia, which is BRITTANIA with an underscore at the end.
And you can follow me personally at Robin E. Jeffrey. That's RobynEJFFrey pretty much everywhere.
Dope.
Our next episode is episode 709. It's called Betty and Veronica Double Digest. And that's literally like the titles of the larger comic collections. Like, there are several Archie comics that are literally named that. The Double Digest series are larger versions of the Archie Digest publication line. The regular digests were 128 pages, later 80 pages, while the Double Digests were 256 pages, later 160 pages. Hence the name Double Digest.
They were my favorites.
So, yeah. Okay, love you, bye!
Love you, bye!